My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Super Chatcast. I'm Joel, joined by David McDonald. It is Wednesday, 6th of August, 2025. This is episode 373. Hi Damon. Hey, how about that Music of the Mat remix?
Awesome.
Pretty good, great huh?
Job. Yeah, I listened to the whole thing. Are you sure we're actually recording on Zencaster? Because I don't have any lines whatsoever. I have straight lines.
I'm seeing your lines.
You're seeing my lines on Zencaster?
Yeah. Okay,
then I'm leaving it as is. Good. Yeah, I did listen to it. It was pretty great. Once again, Andrew Risch, I love doing Music and Matt. And so when you had the chance, the minute you sent it over, I was like, I'm putting it on. Starting off hot with a little Street Fighter, or not Street Fighter, a Streets of Rage, rather. Andrew Risch had a little of the Bravery. I knew that band very well. Had that octave, those octave bass lines. Yeah, I love it. I thought it was a really good episode.
I went quite heavy on the sort of retro stuff, the pre turn of the century. But I think between Andrew's picks, he sort of balanced it out. So I thought there was a nice spread of different stuff going on there. And I could have picked about 50 songs. So it has inspired me to maybe sort of go and do some of my own music-related stuff on the Patreon. Because mm-hmm. I've just had this idea in my head for a while of doing an episode just purely focusing on the opening levels of beat-em-up games, like Streets of Rage.
Okay.
So, like, you know, opening level track, Streets of Rage, Final Fight, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, stuff like that. Because there's just something about the opening tracks of beat 'em up games like Streets of Rage where they just really get your blood pumping. And there's so many of them that I like, and sort of sitting there and talking through a bit of music with Andrew has made me think, yeah, I could give it a go, because I'm not really confident talking about music, but it was really fun.
Why? You're incredibly knowledgeable of it, especially the video game stuff, right? Yeah, I think people will dig it. Why not? You know, I would listen to it. So, yeah, do it. Probably better than talking about G1.
I need a bit of a break from doing... Yeah, exactly. I was going to say I need a bit of a break from doing audio for a little bit. After the G1's finished, I might just give myself, like, I don't know, a week off or a fortnight or something. But
how are you feeling? Yeah.
In terms of, like, handling the daily audio stuff,
mm-hmm.
not bad. Like, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was a bit tricky... I was a bit anxious going into our holiday because me and Mally and the kids went away, we went glamping for a couple of days. And I was sort of thinking, like, oh, is that going to be a problem? But it turned out it wasn't. So just lying there in my fancy tent, getting the microphone up once the kids are asleep, watching a bit of G1, doing the audio, it was fine. I've quite enjoyed doing it, actually. And what I think I've enjoyed, what's kept me going doing it is, and I apologize for tooting my own horn, is I think it's really good. I don't think there's, and again, I don't want to be like doing this big sort of chest thumping, putting myself over thing, because I don't do it as part of a gimmick persona, but I genuinely don't think there's anyone else analyzing these shows on a daily basis with a level of insight and analysis that I do. I mean, there's other people, like, you know, Joe Lanzer does a great job, but I think his is from a sort of very sort of US, almost like a sort of lapsed New Japan centric viewpoint. It's for people who are not really watching New Japan. Whereas I think mine is, I wouldn't say, you know, not someone who's just going to whitewash it, but someone who's a bit more passionate about New Japan, who's sort of paying attention and looking for the narrative threads and maybe being a bit more analytical with the matches, the stories of the matches, and sort of the journeys that these wrestlers are being on. So I think I've done a fucking good job, to be honest. And what I don't want to do, David, I don't like doing the regular podcast during the G1, because like doing a weekly recording schedule, like if we record today and we're up to what, like night, what's the next night? Night 13 or something. I don't think anyone wants to hear like me talking about night 7.
Right.
No one gives a shit by then. So I think the only way to cover it is to do daily audio, because once I've watched the show, then again, I love listening to Joe's stuff, because I'm like, right, if I've finished watching night 7, I want to hear what, after I've recorded my own show, I want to hear what he's got to say about night 7. I don't want to hear about night 7, you know, a week later. So I really think it's the best way to cover a high profile round robin tournament like that, because I think you've got to keep up with it. I think that's important. So yeah, I'm proud of the audio that I've done. So thank you all patrons who've been along for the ride. If you've not joined on board yet, do it. Dig into the backlog. It's good stuff.
I mean, I think that's the future, quite honestly. I mean, it seems like, you know, people have done it before, mind you, but I think for a lot of shows like ours, content like that is probably better absorbed than, you know, the weekly recap. Like they kind of, you kind of do want that daily hit. And it's hard to do, and not people, you know, the logistics of it is a little bit of a nightmare, but I kind of see that being like, okay, you know, us like show, like the main feed show being a synopsis show, if that, maybe a higher level view of, but kind of getting into the down and dirty is, you know, that's going to be a Patreon kind of thing. And I think a lot of shows, not just us, like are headed, if not already there, in that direction. So yeah, I think it's good. I mean, I don't know if I would have the stamina for it, but yeah, I mean, that's, I was very curious as to how you would wind up right around this point of G1. And like, if you are petering out, if you've got a second wind, if, you know, it's taking a toll on, and again, the logistics of it. Yeah. It's, I mean, it couldn't be the worst week to fucking have G1 and have me going, you know, canoodling around the fucking world. But, yeah, you're doing an awesome job and appreciate that.
I think it's been a tournament that's rewarding for people who are into it on a bit more of a granular level like me, because I've really enjoyed like focusing on the matches, because a lot of wrestling, I know you sort of consume it in the background, you'll have your phone out, whatever, but for a lot of the matches, and particularly in the A block, I'm just locked into it, and I enjoy, you know, putting the phone away and just really absorbing the match and focusing on it and looking for the little details and the narratives that are self-contained within the matches, because I do feel they reward that keen eye for detail. So there's some wrestlers, like you can tell they put a lot of thought and care into their matches, and there's little stories in the matches, like, oh, the, you know, this, they're working over this body part, and at the end of the match they have to switch to a different body part, or the other wrestler has nullified this particular signature move, and they're just all little things like that that I think you miss that level of nuance if you're just sort of sitting there waiting for the flips and the Spanish flies and all the work rate stuff. So I think it's been really fun for me to watch and actually sort of get into the nitty gritty of that. And yeah, it's been good for the Shinohan freaks, I'd say.
Aside from like the actual wrestling thing, do you think something like this makes you a better podcaster?
Yeah, because it's quite challenging to have a take on everything. Like every match you watch, even if it's an undercard tag, I try to come at it from an interesting angle. Right. You want to have something to say about it, because I think there's no value in me just going, this was a pretty good match, you know, 3.25 stars, or just doing move by move recaps. So being able to watch a match and synthesize and think, well, what was notable? What was remarkable about this match? Was it, you know, the performances of the wrestlers? Was there a storyline aspect of it? Is it, you know, sense of progression from one of the wrestlers, or sort of the tournament wide narrative for the wrestlers? Like there's like trying to find that one kernel of something interesting by which to analyze a match. I find it's challenging, but then when you get it, it's like, yes, I've got something interesting to say about this match. And that, I don't think there've been any matches so far in this tournament where I'm like, I've got nothing to say about this one, because I think that's sort of testament to the effort that the wrestlers are putting in, to be honest. I think, you know, whilst admittedly we kind of hit, I don't want to call it a slump, but, you know, we're at a period in the tournament where wrestlers are trying to sort of manage themselves physically. Up to this point, there haven't been any matches where I've had nothing to say about them. There's been something remarkable about all of them. And I don't think everyone could do that. There are some people who just be like, it was a whatever match, but I'm very clever, Dave. I'm a big brain smart boy, so I can find an interesting angle and some interesting analysis, and I think something thoughtful to say about every match that not everyone else in the fandom can do.
Okay. That's why we get paid the big bucks. That's why we people just fall over themselves to listen to us. Do they? What? All right, cool. I mean, because we'll get into not only, you know, your temperature and how you're feeling with G1. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the actual participants. And one thing that I particularly noticed catching up as much as I could in the past couple shows. But I'll let you, as we love to do, Joel, I'll let you drive the boat, see where we go, and then we'll see where we can fly from there.
Christ, no, I've not really thought this far.
See? Call this audio. All this chest pumping. And we get nothing.
I've done, like, what? There's not really anything. Well, okay, right. No, let's start with something else. So this is something non-G1 related. So let's talk a bit about Tetsuya Naito, because he, quote-unquote, left the company, you know, mutually parted ways, da-da-da. But he's been talking a lot about New Japan, and he specifically said in one of his little talk show video things that he has a message for Tanahashi. So the chatter is that this departure from New Japan is not, it's not really a departure. It was kind of a mutually agreed upon leave of absence with the full intention from both parties that he's going to be back and possibly fairly soon. I don't know. I mean, him saying he's got a message for Tanahashi, to me, that suggests something like appearing at the G1 final and challenging Tanahashi for his retirement match. Mm. And I think that's something interesting that we could unpick, Damon, like the logic behind that. Like, one, whether you agree with that, if you think that is what's going on, and two, what are the relative benefits of doing it like that rather than just saying, oh, Naito's going to take some time off to heal up or get surgery or whatever.
We said from the jump when all this was going down that this was still on the table. Like, it was sudden and somewhat quick, and we knew, you know, the injuries weren't. Those were things that just kept piling on and piling on and piling on, and we knew that, you know, either A, an extended break was needed, or B, that he wasn't going to be around much. And it just happened to coincide with contracts and all that stuff. That being said, though, You know, it was one of those things where I think there were a lot of people that, even though he had kind of like this little mini bye-bye tour, it did feel like that it wasn't enough, and it did feel a little flat, and it did feel like, okay, this is weird how this is just, you know, a guy who's been, you know, on a lot of people's Mount Rushmores for this company. Just kind of like, okay, thanks for your time. Bye. And it is pro wrestling, and it is something where worse marriages and worse divorces have occurred, and people have gotten back together. So yeah, it that news does not shock me. It's probably, like, let's be honest here. If he heals, and if he is healed, and everything is hunky-dory as much as it can possibly be, given the circumstances of his body, his age, all of that, where else is he going to go? You know what I mean? Like, I know people were like, well, he can go to Noah, and he can go to All Japan. He's not full-time? I don't know. Never seemed like a logical fit. That being said, could he do shows? Absolutely he could. And that's not to say that he would even be a full-time New Japan Pro Wrestler. But, you know, popping in occasionally, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back full-time, be truthful. I think the most important thing was, in his current state, he was neither worth the money nor the liability in the ring. Like, where this ended was not a good spot for anybody. So we had to take the time off. The fact that there might be whispers of him returning, great. Because I think it's a good fit. Yeah, I'll take a healthy Naito over just about anybody. And, you know, as a last Tanahashi match, I don't think people would complain about that. You know, you're not gonna bring back fucking. I know there's a lot of talk about Shinsuke. I'll be honest with you. I might rather have Naito. I probably would rather have Naito.
Especially if that's Naito's comeback match.
Right.
I'm not saying that it will be, but you can imagine, like, the way that they've done it to announce that he is leaving, that I think there's a little bit of work about it, in as much as I think, you know, I feel like both parties have maybe been a bit economical with the truth in order to, I don't want to say manipulate the fans, but to try to maximize hype and excitement for when he does return, in a way that if they'd said, oh, Naito is not able to compete in the G1 because he's too banged up, he's going to get surgery and heal up, that maybe doesn't come with the same level of hype and excitement when he does finally come back. So, and also the important caveat being he's out of contract, right? He's not a contracted wrestler. So I know there's a lot of people who are kind of analyzing this with a very, with their pro wrestling booker hat on, thinking like, oh, well, why didn't you have him put over one of the young guys in the G1 qualifying tournament? Or why didn't you have like an angle to write him off? Like, I don't know, Evil beats him up before the G1 or something. But yeah, again, I would say he's not a contracted wrestler.
Right.
That perhaps damages his ability to go out and do stuff in the independents. Like, you know, not he's exactly tearing it up, but at least then he's got the freedom to be able to go and do stuff in the UK or Mexico, whatever it is he's doing, without having to work under the pretense of him, you know, being doing some sort of injury angle from New Japan or whatever. So I think it's just, if I put that conspiracy theory hat on, it kind of answers a lot of questions about what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the key being what you mentioned of, there was no contract. There's nothing, he wasn't a contracted New Japan Pro Wrestler. So the idea of an injury angle or put somebody over on the way out, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you know, I mean, you could say the same thing about Okada and not, you know, not having a contract, but whatever. At the time, he did have a contract, didn't he? Who knows? The point being is that I think for both, they kind of wanted a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. And we're talking like this is a definite, by the way, and certainly it's nothing is carved in stone as of yet. But from the beginning, I think the opportunity was there for something like we're laying out to happen. It's just a matter of, okay, how medically cleared are you and your willingness to come back, and what role will you have? That's really what it's come down to at this point. I don't think the company would, if a phone call was made, I don't think anybody would be hand waving the other. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I just, again, my tinfoil hat theory is I think they've had this mapped out from the start. The return date, like, I think they, both parties know full well when he's coming back. And I just think doing that announcement to say he's leaving the company just, yeah, gives them both a bit of freedom. And otherwise, if you hadn't done that, if you hadn't made that announcement that he's parting ways, him not being included in the G1 would raise a lot of uncomfortable questions, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah, again, you get given that out of sight, out of mind, absence makes the heart grow fonder, all of that stuff where people are not thinking like, oh, where's Naito? Is Naito okay? Is he healthy? Why is he not in the G1? Why is this? Why is that? Da, 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 da. Where people can just kind of forget about him for a moment. You get a little bit of a bump with his little goodbye tour, if we're even going to call it that, around Dontaku time. He's able to get surgery or heal, whatever it is he's doing, explore his own independent business ventures. And then, yeah, again, yeah, my sense is I think by G1 final time, we'll have a clearer picture of what he's doing next.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And it is a case, isn't it, Joel, of, okay, I didn't lie, but I didn't actually give all the information, right? Because it was goodbye. We haven't seen him. He's not been in the ring. He's not been at ringside. He's, you know, absolutely correct. It's been goodbye. We didn't say how long. So I like the scenario. I like the idea of it. We'll see. I think you're right. I think by G1 final time, we'll have a little bit more of a clearer picture.
Yeah, and as far as like being the possibility of him being Tanahashi's final opponent, at the end of the day, right, that retirement match is all about Tanahashi. I don't think there is any sort of transitive property where if you face him against one of the young wrestlers, then somehow the young wrestlers will absorb some sort of power or like XP points. Like, it's almost sort of like a very video gamified mentality about it. The retirement match is always about the retired wrestler. Like, you know, if I think back of retirement matches that I think were done quite well, like, I don't know, the Ric Flair one. I know he didn't, he came back afterwards, but
many times.
That Ric Flair, what was it? Yeah, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 24, the I'm sorry, I love you thing that poisoned the well for a lot of US wrestling. But no one was coming out of that match thinking, wow, look at all the heat Shawn Michaels has got. Shawn Michaels is a star now because he beat right. Ric Flair in the retirement match. It was all about Ric Flair. So retirement matches are all about the guy who's retiring. It's a celebration of them. They're getting the full spotlight. So I think trying to use some sort of transitive property there by expecting the opponent to get some sort of a rub. Like, no one gives a shit about the opponent. When the match is over, 1, 2, 3 thing, the opponent gets out of the ring and fucks off down the ramp because it's not going to be about them. It's going to be all about Hiroshi Tanahashi. So I think that's the important thing to keep in mind with regards to this final match. It's going to be all about the pageantry and the spectacle, and fans get the chance to say goodbye.
Right. That's the key. And don't be surprised if it's, you know, that the guy who's on the way out is, you know, losing, you know, in many of these retirement matches, it's the guy who loses. Anyway, so yeah, it should be, you know, it should be about Hiroshi Tanahashi. It should be a celebration of him. Even though, again, traditionally they almost always have guys lose in that scenario, which I find pretty funny sometimes. Yeah, it is about that. And I personally don't expect any type of like torch passing moment to be on that. Now, that's not to say that there won't be a torch passing moment sometime in, you know, before then. Well, that could definitely happen. But yeah, I don't expect it at the dome.
That's Tetsuya Naito talk. Well, let's get into the G1 then. So let's see what the questions we've got from listeners. Jersey Joe Gotch says, historically, is this the most boring G1 climax ever in terms of outcomes? Sure, the New Japan guys work hard and you can enjoy the craftsmanship of the matches, but the talent level is far below what WWE and AEW have. We've got the hashtags there in the question. Mm-hmm. And the booking overall brings out the worst in the talent. I disagree with that. I think that kind of opinion is emblematic of people who, you know, there's a lot of fans who are kind of, I don't think they're actually watching New Japan. If they are, they're sort of hate watching and doing sort of the big match tourist stuff. But there's, I think, a subsection of probably lapsed fans, it'd be fair to say, who are just sitting there like Grumpy Pingu, upset because it's not 2017 anymore. And so they've kind of deified that era in their minds, like that was the peak of New Japan when all their favorites, which is fine. Like, it was an outstanding era for the company. Like, the 2017 to 2019 era was great. Like, they had an unbelievably stacked roster. There's no getting around that. And there is absolutely no one who is going to tell you with a straight face that the roster now is stronger than it was then. Like, we know that. But I just think, if you just approach it with the adage, comparison is the thief of joy. I don't think there is any value in constantly making these comparisons to 2017, 2018, 2019, or comparing to what rosters other companies have. Like, if you love the WWE and the AEW rosters, go watch those companies. That's fine. This is New Japan. This is the New Japan roster we got at the moment. I think there's a lot to like. There's a lot to criticize as well. And we've been perfectly forthcoming with our criticism, what we think New Japan is not doing well. But I strongly disagree with this take that it's the most boring G1 climax ever. And, you know, the talent's not there. The talent is there. The booking, yeah, can be a bit hit and miss. But I don't think we can say in good faith at night 12 that it's the most boring in terms of outcomes. Like, we've not reached the outcomes yet. Let's have that conversation after the final. Those are the outcomes. You can't have an outcome-based analysis on night 12 of a fucking tournament because there's 19 nights of it. Let's have that conversation after night 19.
I agree, mostly to that. I will say that there is always that element of comparison, and you are right. But I know I'm guilty of it with not only with this, but with, like, you know, just if we're using music as an example, you know, people are always going to compare albums and career path and sound direction and stuff like that to, like, you know, especially if a band gets out of the gates really hot and it's like, oh, okay, album five. Well, this isn't, you know, X album or, you know, second album or whatever the hell. And it's hard for people. And again, when I say people, I mean me as well, to do that, to separate that and come to a thought process that it's two separate things. Like, it's under the same banner, but it is really two separate things, two separate eras, two separate, like, separate rosters, separate everything. I wouldn't necessarily say, and again, I haven't watched every single show, so again, take that with a little asterisk. But what I've seen, I don't know if it's the worst. It's probably not the, well, it's not the best. And if I'm being 100% honest with everyone, it's probably in the lower half, right? It's probably in the lower half if I were to slice a line down the middle. Is it the most boring, though? No, because I don't think G1 in general is boring. I think there's always an element of, at the very least, surprise at finishes and guys who pin other guys and trying to figure out what is going to happen next, especially in a tournament scenario and in a company that loves to keep everyone competitive. So there's always that. Is this the same company? Like, that roster was like, I mean, this is not a knock, and this is not a fucking jab, but you're trying to compare Drilla Maloney, ELP, Yoshihashi, etc., with, you know, Tanahashi, Okada, Ibushi, whoever else. And like the bottom feeders of those tournaments were guys like Michael Elgin, right. Say what you will about Michael Elgin, the guy had a fucking pair of working boots on, and was willing to go. So it's not the most boring, but it's not the best, if I'm being fair.
Piggyback off that, a question from Marcus is, how many of this year's G1 entrants would get into the roster of the G1 from 2017? And it's really interesting to sort of piggyback off what you just said, David, and explore that, because those G1s had their fair share of shitters in them as well. And sure. I think what no one was saying at the time, well, everyone was celebrating the, you know, night after night bangers, and the state of that roster was one that, in hindsight, we can say was on a precipice, because there weren't many / any future Japanese heavyweight stars there. It was all very much now, now, now. It was veterans, and it was guys in their absolute prime. Yeah. So there wasn't anyone in those fields where you were looking at and thinking, okay, well, after, you know, Okada, Ibushi, Kenny, Naito gone, it's going to be this group of wrestlers who are taking us into the future. It was very much just sort of short-term win now kind of roster. So again, hindsight being 2020, I do think that is something that stands out looking at those rosters that has kind of been fixed now. And I know I've, you know, been critical of New Japan at the moment, their failure to make new stars. But again, watching A Block makes me tremendously excited, because I can see younger talent like, you know, Tsuji, Yuya Uemura, David Finlay, Callum Newman, Oleg Bolton, Yohei Oiwa, and think that is, you know, a core group of wrestlers just in one block who should be able to take the company into the future. This is not guys who are at their absolute prime and going to start breaking down physically within the next couple of years. This is a very healthy, promising group of talent that should be with us for the next, you know, 5, hopefully 10 years. Yeah. And I think comparing specifically the 2017 roster, as this person's laid out, Bad Luck Fale, Togi Makabe, Yoshihashi still in there. And I think 2025 Yoshihashi is better than 2017 Yoshihashi. Minoru Suzuki, was he really delivering night in, night out in the G1 in that period? Tama Tonga, 2017 Sanada, you know, the cold skull stuff, bit dodgy, bit ropey. LIJ Evil, was he a particularly exciting wrestler? Yano, like you said, Elgin, I mean, mileage is going to vary on that. Again, those are some names that I think you could conceivably, like, you could have the argument to replace them with guys like Yuya Uemura or Yota Tsuji or Oiwa or Taichi or Finlay or Bolton or Takeshita. Or even, like, I don't know, is it fair to compare a 2017 version of a wrestler with a 2025 version of a wrestler? Like, excuse me, 2025 Zach compared to 2017 Zach.
Right.
Or Shingo Takagi or Callum Newman. Like, I really think that this is, people are sleeping on this field and the quality and the depth of talent that they've got. And I agree, like, the booking doesn't always do it justice, but this is a really deep roster of talent, and I think people are kind of hand-waving that.
I agree. And I think that when people look back, they will appreciate more. And I would dare people to go back and look at some of the lineups in, like, the early 2000s for G1. You know, some of these lineups, even if you wanted to go further down the line in the beginning of what, you know, G1 is, when they incorporated a ton of WCW. I mean, let's put it this way. Jim fucking Neidhart was in G1. All right? You know what I mean? There's been stinkers along the way throughout the years, the many years of G1. You know, did anybody give a fuck in 2007 when Aki Bono was in there? You know? Yano was in there. Milano Collection AT's in there. You know, there's been pluses and minuses throughout this entire tournament. And I know people want to kind of just draw the line in the sand with, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Go earlier than that. Not many people are slogging through some of those early 2000 G1s. And some of them were not that great. I mean they had moments, but there were a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but, you know, there were quite a few times where, you know, you're like, Giant Bernard's in there? Okay, great. You know, even though he was pretty decent for a big guy at the time, but trust me, there's not, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. Yes, it's great to just kind of draw the line and say, yep, that was G1. There's a standard and it's, you know, that run that we always talk about, but G1's been around for a long time and it hasn't always been what people expect of G1 now. You're going to have off peak times. And I'm not even saying this is some of the worst. This is okay. It's not upper echelon, but it's not the dregs. It's not the dregs. Scott Norton. I know Scott Norton was a massive star, but can we really be honest here about Scott Norton? Or can we really be honest about Scott Norton? And again, you go back when there was a lot of WCW involvement, you know, like 95. I mean, 95 with Flair in it. That was not a great one. Had Muda, Chono, Shiro Koshinaka, Tenzan's in there, Norton's in there, Shinya Hashimoto's in there, who, again, 95 is a very strong fucking year. I don't remember that G1 being spectacular. You know, you go even early. You got Kengo Kimura hopping around in there. You got Super Strong Machine, who was well past this fucking point. You know, Kabuki's in there. Great Kabuki. You know, come on. Let's be fair. And that's 93. You know, a New Japan Pro Wrestling fucking, you know, we're in prime time New Japan Pro Wrestling. Look at the first one. Is it the first one? It's 92s. You got Arn Anderson in there. You got Steve Austin's in there. Barry Windham's in there. Tony Halm. Neidhart's in there. Terry Taylor is in there. The Barbarian is in it.
That would be a very useful roster to go through in your head if you're trying to delay your climax whilst having sex with someone. Just sort of go through the roster of the 1992 G1. You'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm good for another minute or two.
Right. I mean, these are all great names in pro wrestling history, but, you know, just because you're a great name in the Crockett territory doesn't necessarily mean that that translates to a Japanese crowd in 1992. And trust me, it didn't. So, all right. You know, enough moaning about G1.
Yeah, I think this G1 has a high floor. I don't think anything has been really bad. I mean, your mileage is going to vary on the House of Torture stuff. I would say that's probably the worst of it if you're a work rate fanatic. But there's just no stars. So I think a deep, talented roster, but no stars. There's no one moving the needle. There's, you know, the attendances are poor, and it's chickens coming home to roost. I've been saying this for, it feels like years now, about the inability to make stars, and here we are. That's why we're getting, you know, 1,000 people turning up to shows where previous years we've had you know, several times that amount. And some of that, I think, is also down to weird choice of venues. There have been a lot of venues picked on this tour that have never been used before and may never be used again. And I look them up on maps and they're fucking miles out of the city center. So, you know, like we might look at a show, yesterday's show, and be like, oh, Osaka, that's a terrible number for Osaka. Yes, it is a bad number for Osaka. I'm not going to dispute that. But then it's the in-text conference arena number 5, which, you know, takes an hour to get to on public transport from central Osaka. Like, there's some very weird venue choices, which I think hasn't really helped things. But
what's weird is that poor Walker Stewart, he's broadcasting from Osaka Joe Hall. So that's what makes it really odd and strange. But yeah, look, there's plenty of baked in issues with the logistics of the G1, booking arenas in advance. I don't know if anybody else knows this, but there's other things going on in Japan too. Concerts and the like.
You know, refurbishments going on, aren't there? I mean, yeah. I've tried to ask around, but it's exhausting. Well, why didn't you use this venue? Why haven't you used this venue? I think there's just a lot of venues that are closed, or yeah, that's the story I'm going with. Like venues that have classically been used on these tours being refurbished, and I think that's why there's all these strange venues being used.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They're, let's put it this way: they are certainly, some of them certainly were not set up for the idea of a major pro wrestling company to come strolling in for a major tour. That is for certain, but. You know, sometimes you just got to make do what we got to make do. And you got to squeeze 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I think probably the best way to analyze the tournament, to give sort of big picture thoughts, I think we should open up the sportprowrestling.com scenario tracker.
All right, I can do that.
And I think we should do that. I think we should input our respective predictions for night 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Okay.
And see where that leads us. And whilst we're doing that, we can sort of give our thoughts on the wrestlers that we are discussing at the time and just see what sort of monstrosity lineups we have coming out for the knockout stage, which, of course, we'll preview next week. But it's very challenging for me to try to make picks and think, right, I want these few wrestlers to go through. I want this match on night 15 to be meaningful so that if this guy wins, I can't do it, right? I'm not clever enough to do that. And there's a lot of sort of parity booking going on that makes that sort of stuff impossible, where I'm looking at sort of multi-way tiebreaker situations and it just makes my brain hurt. So I think we just go through our picks and just see what comes out.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. I think it makes the most sense. Yeah, I think my head would explode if I tried to. I mean, I looked at where I stood one night, I think it was like I was 500th in standing.
I'm so bad at this.
Me too. I stink so much. Not to derail, but do you ever like go on there and just like look for names that you recognize?
I stopped doing it. I know I was spying on stuff. I think Josh from We Work Stiff was saying on their Discord, like me and him are like down in 500th place, like two nobodies fighting over nothing. It was very funny.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. Block A, I think we start off on night 13, right? August 7th, which is tomorrow night, Quirk and Hall. It's Sonata and Hiroshi Tanahashi leading us off.
All right, so yeah, big pitch thoughts on the wrestlers. Sonata has had a patchy tournament. He started off quite strong. He was working really hard at the start, but then as we sort of lapsed into the dog days, he's, I'd say, phoning in. I mean, sort of lapsing into the more kind of formulaic House of Torture, cheating, interference style. I've enjoyed his outfits, and I enjoy this iteration of Sanada, which I think is sort of a more authentic representation of who the real Seiya Sanada is. He looks like he's enjoying himself a bit more, but he's been pretty inconsistent. And, you know, your mileage is going to vary just based on how you see the House of Torture stuff, because I think up to the point before he does the House of Torture stuff, he's actually been wrestling pretty well. There have been some nice segments and matches where you see sort of flashes of old Sonata and you think, hey, you know, he's still got it. But then you get all the shit with all the interference and the cheating at the end. You're just like, ah, bollocks to this. Some people like that. Some people hate it. So, I mean, that's my Sonata analysis. Tanahashi, has exceeded my expectations, definitely. He looks... I'm just surprised he's survived this far, to be honest. I was wondering, with the sheer quantity of main events that he's got, that whether he would make it this long. I thought, like, you know, at night three, he might tear a tendon or something and he'd be fucked. So he's vastly exceeded my expectations in terms of his output and how he's held up physically. Like, I think the quality of the matches has been excellent. And again, I think we have to examine this as a chance for him to have cool matches with lots of guys on the roster. Not necessarily to, oh, he's got to put everyone up over. Because I think Tanahashi putting someone over doesn't have any inherent value. I think the value lies in having cool matches with people. And I think there have been a lot of really cool matches. He's worked really hard and I'm impressed with his output. It does not move in any tickets. It doesn't seem to be much of a draw. It's definitely the Tanahashi retirement tour is overexposed. But I don't really think you can have any complaints about the quality of the matches. So happy in terms of that. If I'm going to have a pick, I guess he's still alive, Tanahashi.
He sure is.
In terms of the tournament, not
literally. Oh,
imagine if we published it and then terrible, like, you get the black and white line mark. No, I'm not even going to say it.
Yeah, don't drink it. We've already lost a major pro wrestling celebrity. We can't lose another.
I guess, you know, do we think Hiroshi Tanahashi is in with a shot of qualifying, of being in the top three? Like, do they try and squeeze that lemon a little bit more to have that feel-good moment of him beating Sanada and Evil? I think he would need to beat both of them in order to be in with a shot of qualifying. He's got his 100th win. I thought that was going to be the narrative. I thought it was going to be him having to wait until the last night on 99 wins and then beat Evil to get his 100th G1 win. I thought that would be his big celebratory moment. But no, he's still going strong. I just think it would be weird for him to just lose to Sanada and be like, oh, that's it. The G1's just come to an end against Sanada. That would feel very anticlimactic to me. So that's exactly what they're going to do. But I don't know. I'm running with it. I'm running with the vibes. I'm picking Tanahashi.
I keep telling myself, and eventually he's got to fall off, right? Like, yeah, he's still in the mix, and they're going to, just like you said, get every drop they can out of the lemon. But eventually it's got to fall off. And I would think right around here is when that starts to take shape. And I don't know if the bigger bang is with Sanada or if it's with Evil. Right, to make sure that he's not there, right? Because there's part of me that's like, okay, they can't stretch it out too far because now we're getting into like dangerous territory, and
Almorin in the chat, he says the Aces look good and he's wrestling well enough to justify him moving on. And I think I've got a point there. Like, why not have Tanahashi go through?
I guess my point is would be like, okay, are you okay with sacrificing are you going for the feel good moment now, which I can totally respect, understand, I'm in, because truth be told, name me a bigger star, right? Like, he's still the guy, even though, I mean, again, I think there's a myriad of different issues with this retirement tour, but okay, that's a different situation, a different conversation. But could you justify him being in there? Absolutely, you could. If you're waiting for the fall off, though, it's got to occur sometimes now. So it depends on where you want to put your fucking chips. Do you want to go feel good, or do you want to go? I'm going to go feel good for now. I'm going to feel good for now. Feel good. Let's feel good. Hiroshi Tanahashi's my pick.
Okay, then let's do Taichi versus Callum Newman. I think Taichi has probably been my MVP of the tournament. He's just having outstanding matches, as I thought he would. I mean, this is like the biggest victory lap ever. Although not a particularly ambitious one, because I think everyone knew Taichi's great. I don't think that was ever in dispute. So I just find it very vindicating to see him having killer matches with everyone. He's elevating the young guys. He's awesome. Like, I think you could make the case for him being like one of the top five heavyweights in the company right now. So love it. He's brilliant. Callum Newman, I think, has also had a low-key strong tournament. A lot of people seem to be hand-waving him and not really enjoying his matches as much as I am. I think he's been fantastic. I think he's improved leaps and bounds over the last 12 months. He's channeling less Ospreay and more Devitt, which has been a brilliant transformation to him. He's just like a little mouth, well, not little, big. He's a big dude. He's a big, mouthy prick. He's rude. He's cocky. He's got attitude. He hits people really hard. He kicks people hard. He stomps on them. He's just a piece of shit. I love him. Like, I think he's been really good. And I'm tremendously excited by his talent because I don't think he's a prospect anymore. So I think he's arrived. Like, he's good to go. You could plug him in any top match, and I think he delivers to an acceptable level, if not higher. So I think a lot of people are sleeping on Callum Yuma. I think he's been really, really impressive this tournament, not just the wrestling, but the attitude as well. Like, he looks like a guy who believes in himself. He believes that he's the future of this company, and I hope he is. So, yeah, I enjoyed both guys out, but a tremendous amount. Now, this is a really important match because the loser is eliminated, right? It's pretty straightforward here. Both guys are on 6 points. And again, like, do I go with a Tai Chi miracle run or do I go with the, you know, the young upstart impressing people and, you know, doing better than a lot of people would think? That's a really hard one for me to pick. So I don't want to pick. You go first.
I'm picking a draw. I'm going to say it was, imagine if I said every match, draw. Just draw. Night of draws. Okay, so both guys are on the cusp of elimination. Both guys, I don't think either of us would complain who went on.
Agreed.
But neither of them are going to be in the finals. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Okay. So in essence, this is just a matter of math.
Yeah,
I'm taking Cal Newman. I don't expect him to be near the top of the blocks, but, you know, they could go Tai Chi too, because eventually you got to get rid of, you know, I'll say Callum just for now. Fine, because I want you to pick Tai Chi.
I'm going to pick Tai Chi because they had a match at Korakuen, didn't they, for the initial G1 qualifier was Tai Chi versus Newman.
Mm. Good point.
So, parity booking, Tai Chi gets his win back for me. Would eliminate Callum Newman. All right, then it's Yuya Uemura versus Yohei Oiwa. Yuya has been fucking great in this tournament. He is making the strong case to me that he should be the guy who gets the rocket pack. I don't want to hear any more excuses. I don't want to hear, oh, he's not ready yet. Just fucking pick a guy, do something with him. Yuya has been outstanding. I love his style. He's absolutely committed to his vision of what pro wrestling is, and I think he is delivering consistently in all the big spots he's been in. He's my guy. Let's go with it. Homegrown guy, good looking, talented, young, whole future ahead of him. New Year's guy. Pick him.
10,000%.
Cut him up. I don't care. Like, win the G1, rescue the main event, world champion. Just do it. No excuses. We've not got time for that. Yuya, awesome wrestler. Oiwa, yeah, very impressed with him as well. He's not at that level. He's still sort of figuring himself out. There's a really good episode of that New Heroes documentary that they've been doing where they were following Oiwa around, like, his gym with his bodybuilding coach and going back to school and talking to his maths teacher and his sports teacher and his wrestling trainer. And he's just, as I suspected with him, he's too nice. He's a humble, hardworking guy, full of humility. And he needs to stop being so nice. He needs to look at himself in the mirror and be like, I am a young, sexy, jacked dude, and I should be the future of this company. I'm better than everyone else, and start acting like it and start showing a bit of attitude and start a bit of swagger, start hitting people harder, because all the other ingredients are there. Like, the basics, the bell-to-bell stuff is rock solid. It's been really good. Like, he's had some very, very strong matches this G1. I think that's all he's missing is just a bit of oomph, a bit of attitude, a bit, I don't want to say charisma, because he has charisma, but just, yes, stop being so nice and just have a bit of what Callum Newman's doing, right? A bit of rough edges, like, because to be a top guy in the company, you can't be Mr. Nice Guy. You've got to have a bit of cockiness. So Yeah, that's my assessment on Iowa. And if I've got a pick, I'm going for Yuya.
So I agree with what you have said. And I will kind of double down on it and say, I'd rather the company at this point just go for it with Yuya. And could there be some hiccups? Could there be some missteps? Could there be things down the road that we have not quite been able to prognosticate and see in advance? And of course, yes. Let's just say yes and accept it as lesson learned. Let's move on. But yes, that's your guy. Let's make no mistake about it. That's your guy. Now, is he the guy right now? I would say Tsuji is the guy right now that is closer to that finish line than Yuya. But I think eventually it'll be Yuya. I don't think they know what they want to do with Owa. I really don't. I don't think the company has an idea. I don't think... Like, if you asked him, I'm sure he would tell you what he would think would be the best way to go. But I just think there's just a lot of, I don't know what to do with them. And I think that's a problem that New Japan has with a lot of guys right now. And that's why I kind of always feel like there's this non-vision, or at least this vision that hasn't quite manifested itself in front of people's eyes. I'm going with Yuya as well. I hate to say it just because it seems samesies. I could easily see it going the other way though. But yeah, I kind of wish it would be Yuya just kind of sweeping away, getting big wins, building him up, and making him, if not the guy, like a guy where everyone is there saying, that's the guy. That's the guy. And it takes, there's only so much that the actual wrestler can do to push that narrative. Like, you have to put burden on the company to do that. And this is, we know it. This is sometimes an infuriatingly conservative company. Put the fucking rocket on the guy. Light the match. Light the fuse. Let's fucking go. That's the guy. Everyone knows it. Everyone sees it. Everybody wants it. That's the guy. Do it.
Then we got Oleg Bolton versus Evil. Oleg, I think, has had a really strong tournament. I like the gimmick he's doing where he sort of catches people's moves in midair and uses his power and strength to just... He's just like a big bet in the ring, and it's awesome. Like, he's living up to the gimmick. Evil, I enjoyed it at first. I mean, there was a certain degree of refreshment there. Ooh, Manny's brought me some little Thai desserts.
Mm.
Where Don Farley, being a part of the act, kind of freshened things up for a bit, but it's kind of outlived its novelty at this point. And I mean, again, your mileage is going to vary. If you like the house stuff, if you're a house pervert, then you'll kind of enjoy the shenanigans when he gets a bit more creative with it. But you know, it's Evil. Like, what do you want me to say? I'm good. They're both on 8 points. And like, the boring thing to do would be like pick Evil, because you got to keep Evil as a threat and looking dangerous going into the late stage of the tournament. But I don't want to do that. I'm picking Oleg.
I like it. I'm looking at some of the stats. And by the way, we pumped it up before. We're pumping it up again. Fucking Samson. Holy shit, I'm a dope. Chris Samson and Jeremy. What's Jeremy's last name? Building out that fucking site. Just an unbelievable job. I'm looking at some of the stats.
Jeremy Sexton.
Should remember that. If I were you tell me, all time, Evil, how many wins does Evil have in his entire G1 career?
So let's see, his debut G1 would have been think 2016 or was it 2017?
Probably a little bit later than that, right?
His first G1, I think he was definitely in 2017. I can't remember if he, I think he was in 2016 as well. So he's not missed any. So that would mean he's been in about 10 G1s at this point. So he's 50 wins.
That's a really good guess. Good job by you. 45 wins, 32 losses, with a winning percentage of 0.584. Oleg Bolton, Bolton Oleg, Oli Oli, Oli Oli Income Free. He's 7-5 with the same win percentage, just about 583, slightly better. Or slightly worse, just by like a, not even fucking an ass hair. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But the thing that glaringly sticks out to me, Joel, Evil has lost 4. He's due for a win. He's winning.
I don't know. I seem to get the impression that that's a load-bearing result because due to tiebreakers and stuff, the fact that Evil has beaten guys like, who's he beaten? Oiwa, Tai Chi, Tsuji, Newman. I don't know. There's some. I got into some tiebreaker
scenario
issues by having Evil winning that. But yeah, no, go with that. Let's see where it takes us. And then main event, Corican Hall. Really looking forward to this. Yota Tsuji versus David Finlay. Tsuji, yeah, great. I think he is showing star quality. He's got great charisma. He's got great crowd connection. And I love him. I think he's been awesome. David Finlay, really impressed with him because he had the losing run. His has been one of the more interesting stories within the tournament. I constantly throw flowers at him. He's such a cerebral wrestler. Makes other guys look good. Extremely generous. Bumps like a madman to make his opponents look great. Really unselfish. Great team player. And I like this comeback run that he's doing. I thought the match against Evil was a lot of fun where he got his revenge from the dog collar match and just basically destroyed House of Torture single-handedly. So he seems to be kind of riding this wave of babyface momentum coming into this, and it's must win for him. So it would be really weird for him to just not win that and be like, oh, okay, so his David Finlay's run ends on night 13. Like, that just doesn't sit right for me. I think he needs to be alive going into that final match with Yuya. But at the same time, if he does beat Tsuji here, then Tsuji's in big trouble because he's lost tiebreakers to a lot of important wrestlers. So I'm almost tempted to be a coward and pick the draw there, although I'm not sure that helps Finlay. I think that eliminates Finlay too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Damon. I don't know what's... I'm just going to pick Finlay here because I like David Finlay.
The only reason why I lean a little bit more toward David Finlay is head-to-head. And again, once again, great job, G1, Sport of Pro Wrestling. .com is where you want to check these stats out. Head-to-head, David Finley's lost 3 times head-to-head. You would think that number is going to start balancing out a little bit, right? Mathematically, I don't know. I'm going Finlay. Let's just go Finlay. Who fucking cares? Finlay it is.
Let's stick with A block and let's move the scenario tracker to night 15 for the August 10th show.
All right. 15, there we are. Okay, all right. There we are.
Evil versus Tanahashi.
Yes. Who's got? Well, I gave Tanahashi the win with the idea that he's going to get the loss here. Evil.
I'll go Tanahashi. I'm doing it. I'm doing the miracle final run. Well, I don't know if that's going to qualify, but I'm picking him anyway. Okay. Taichi versus Oleg.
Tai Chi at this point would be eliminated. Possibly eliminated. Bolton. I'll tell you what. This screams to me like a bigger overarching issue. Like, we have guys with titles that those titles mean nothing now. like them being in G1 holding titles like has completely devalued titles because they're bottom of the pack, and it's like, what the fuck? If anything screams to you, New Japan Pro Wrestling, get rid of some of these fucking titles that are absolutely worthless. Should be this tournament, but okay. It really depends on how you feel about if Tai Chi's moving on, or I'm going to Bolton. I'm going Bolton.
I'll go Tai Chi.
All right.
Then we got Yuya versus Finlay.
Do we ride it? Let's ride it, Yuya.
Yeah. Then, as much as I want David Finlay to go through to the next round, I don't think both of them are going to go through.
No, neither do I. And if you're going to ride it, like if we're going to sit here and spend 10 minutes, 20 minutes talking about fucking Yuya, then let's just put our money where our mouth is, make it happen. Next up is Tsuji versus Callum Newman. I'm going Yota Tsuji.
Yes, me too.
All right. And then lastly, it's Oiwa and Sanada. Ooh. Where's this at? Where's this show at? Gunma. The fuck is Gunma? Does Sanada have any ties to Gunma? Has he done any business dealings in Gunma? Any relatives from there?
If in doubt, just go with the parity booking option. Something that's going to level the points out.
Sanada it is then. Done. Huh? All right, where are we going? Where are we bouncing to next?
Who have you got as your top three in A block then?
How do I find it?
So if you expand that window, it should have the tables updated for you in real time.
Okay, I probably have to hit this button because I'm on my mobile. Oh, there we go. Okay. Yuya. Yuya's at the top. It's Yuya and Evil.
Who's the top three? Because remember, top three go through.
Yuya, Evil, and Yota Tsuji.
Okay, I've got Yuya, Tanahashi, and Taichi. It seems unlikely.
And what place are you in? You're at Tilt on the
It just says error.
Error. I mean, I think, see, the problem is that I have Tanahashi at like I just have a plethora of eight at that point. Tai Chi the last. Yeah. I mean, my top three isn't bad. I think the bottom half is dog shit, but yeah, okay. And who do you have, top three?
It keeps changing now because I'm just sort of playing around with other results to see what happened. And now I can't it go back to what it was before.
Just make it up.
Because this just looks like there's going to be a logjam of wrestlers stuck on 10 points.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to do that. I just feel they're going to go with something a lot simpler and just have some wrestlers on 12 points.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I still think Yuya's got to be in that fucking mix. Right? He's got to be in that mix. Yeah. All right.
Yes.
So at least, no matter what else pans out, Yuya, give me two names that are definitely in the top three. Two names. Yuya, Yota Tsuji?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're in agreement.
Yeah, so now my table is saying Yuya, Taichi, and Tsuji.
Okay.
I don't know how I've made it do that, but I'm leaving that. I'm not touching it anymore.
Yeah. This, you look at his results, it's like draw.
Yeah, I've not had any draws. I mean, there's probably will be a draw at some point.
You would think, right?
I'm not touching, I'm not fucking around with it anymore. Okay.
Now we're getting what, 9-14?
Night 14, yeah. Bebop.
All right. Kanagawa. Wow. It's good old Shota against Takeshita. Give me your thoughts on Shota. How's his G1 been?
I think it's been very good.
Okay.
Again, I've focused with Shota more on the bell-to-bell stuff rather than what outfit he's wearing or what he's doing when he's walking to the ring, like what his crowd interactions are. That doesn't interest me as much. What I want to see from him is him in intense matches where he's playing to his strengths and hitting people really hard. And he's doing that. So I've actually been really pleased with Shota's output so far this tournament.
Okay.
Takeshita, not as spectacular as last year. I think he's pacing himself. I think he knows he's going deep in this tournament and he's not taking it easy, but being sensible.
I think it's fair. I think it's a fair assessment and a smart decision, actually. Because guess, I mean, you know, I was going to say something. I'm not even going to put it in the fucking universe. Yeah. So maybe as we like to say in the American sports world, load management. Load management, Joel. It's a concept of having your star players not play every fucking single game. Having them sit out to prepare themselves for important games. So that might be what's happening right here. So even with that being said, I still think Takeshita gets the win.
I'm picking Shota here, actually.
Ooh, yeah. Is that just a math thing or a thing that you already had in the back of your mind?
I had it in the back of my mind. I like the optics of it.
Okay.
I think Takeshita, I've not decided yet, but he may win the whole tournament. I think there's a fairly good chance he is in the main event at Wrestle Kingdom. I could certainly see that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Shota Umino will be, but I think he would benefit from the optics of having a big win against Takeshita in a really good, hard-hitting match.
Yeah. Speaking of Shota, do you think we look back on his 2025 as a year that has done more good or more harm for him? And I say that with this. You can't get diamonds without pressure. And do you think this whole year of kind of feeling like you're under a microscope, you're being maybe fairly, maybe unfairly judged, a ton of pressure, and you've been asked to headline a big, big boy show, and then shave your head, look like a boob, come back, basically try to reinvent yourself, but really not, blah, 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 blah. Do you think we look back on this in 3 years, 4 years, and say, like, you know, that 2025, the guy was dragged through a fucking pound of shit, but look at him now. It made him better, stronger, wiser pro wrestler. Yes or no? Am I full of shit, or do I have something here?
Yes, I totally agree with you, Damon. I think he's been mismanaged. I think what is a case in point here is the fact that he and Zach had an absolutely killer G1 match when they went 20 minutes rather than their bloated Wrestle Kingdom main event, which was 45 minutes, because that was just a terrible idea. There were parts of a good match in there, but it was not playing to Shota's strengths at all. So I just think he's receiving a lot of mixed advice, right? The camel is the horse designed by committee. He's got loads of people in his ear. Oh, you should do this. Oh, you should do this. You should do this. You should high five the babies. You should wear these clothes. You should shave your head. You should do more strong style stuff. You should do that. Blah, 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 blah. And I think he looked very confused.
Yeah.
But now he's kind of figuring out. And again, I'm just purely focusing on the in-ring stuff. He has figured out an in-ring style that works for him and produces good matches and gets the crowd on side. So we take that. That's a massive W. We're going to build on that, right? I'm not interested in the music or whether or not he's high-fiving babies or what clothes he's wearing, right? That's just background noise. But the strides he's made in terms as a bell-to-bell wrestler are undeniable, right? Particularly the turning point being that New Japan got a final match with Finlay. Surprise, surprise, it's David Finlay who gets his best match out of him up to that point. And that's the turning point for me.
Good point. All right. Next up is Block B's El Phantasmo. Already eliminated a strong week before the show even occurs. Against the point leader who lost the other day, Yoshihashi, Block B. Give us your prediction.
All right, well, thoughts of the wrestlers first. Phantasmo, I was quite annoyed with him at the start of the tournament because I just thought he was doing stupid things. Like, I thought his instincts for how to lay the matches out were poor and led to some matches that I thought were just badly structured. But he's gotten better, I think. And whilst I still maintain that he is probably one of the weakest bell-to-bell wrestlers in the field, he's being a little bit more sensible and structuring matches that are going to play to his strengths slash hide his weaknesses. So I'm finding him a bit more palatable than I was earlier in the tournament. Yoshihashi is Yoshihashi. Like, I think all G1 climaxes need a Yoshihashi, a guy who's going to go out there and try his best. He's not going to have the best matches. He's not going to have the most points, but he's a guy who raises the floor, right? So love Yoshihashi being this tournament. He's been Yoshihashi. And I mean that as a compliment. I'm picking ELP to win.
ELP has been maybe the most frustrating wrestler in the past 3 years, 4 years, New Japan. Like, I don't know where we are, what we're doing, what we want to do. Injuries haven't helped. Health concerns haven't helped. It's just been one misstep and one roadblock and one thing after another. And I don't know how much rope I have left. And trust me, go back and listen to these shows. I think I'm one of his biggest supporters. And I just was begging people, hey, hold on. The company really likes him. Hey, hold on. The guy's got a ton of talent. Hey, hold on. People really respect his thoughts. Hey, hold on. And it just hasn't happened yet. Like it, and yet we can race because it's past due. I do like the fact that he's been eliminated early and he's wrestling like it's whatever. I'm fucking just throwing caution to the wind and let the fucking chips fall where they will. Case in point was the match I watched this morning with Jalil Maloney. Like that felt like a definitive win, right? Which had me scratching my head, like, okay, but yeah. I don't know what to do with him. I feel like the title that he holds has completely lost any fucking value. I don't know. Could you hit a reset button? And you could. I don't know how many fucking years it has to go on, though. Like, I don't know. It's frustrating.
He's past his prime, and yep, he's like a solid mid-card veteran hand who's good to have around. He's good for morale. You know, you can sort of plug him into undercard / mid-card feuds. He's never going to be a top guy, and that's okay.
Okay, then. All right. Then, to me, that's a waste.
A waste of what, though? I don't think he's that good as a wrestler. He's
I think where we disagree. I do. Okay. Because and maybe it's the opponent. Maybe it's who his dance partner is. Maybe he can't do that with everyone. But there are times, Joel, where I'm like, oh, there's that guy that I've heard so much people rave about. Oh, there's.
But it happens so infrequently it's of no value.
I can't say it's of no value because it's the thing that I kind of sink my teeth into and I grab.
It's the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah,
right. So he's had great matches with Konosuke Takeshita, Will Ospreay, Robbie Eagles, right? What is the the commonality there, right? It's wrestling against world-class opponents in big spots in front of hot crowds.
Yeah.
That's his peak, okay? He's not going to be... I don't think he is a top wrestler on his own merits.
Maybe you're right. I mean, it look, the facts don't lie. Let's put it that way. The facts don't lie. And the output doesn't lie, so... Yeah, maybe I'll take the big fat L on that one. And even with that said, though, I'll still give him the win.
We'll balance the points out, David.
Exactly.
All right, next then is Shingo versus Ren. Shingo's been Shingo. I mean, I think there is a very gradual but noticeable decline.
Yep.
And that's not to say he's bad, but I think, like, tippy-toppy Shingo... We're past that. And that, again, that's okay. Still a very good wrestler, still a very valuable wrestler. But I think I'm past the point where I think, oh, let's do something with Shingo. Shingo's being underutilized, right? He's, how old is he? What, 42? I don't know how old he is, but.
40s, by the way, yeah.
Yeah. No, let's not do stuff with Shingo. Let's focus on the young wrestlers, please. And thank you. But again, great guy to have in a G1. And he's been pretty good this year. Ren, someone had a question about Ren. Kay loves wrestling. Do you think Ren will still be with the house this time next year? It feels like we've seen glimpses of really good stuff from him this G1, but it's few and far between because of all the interference, and it's killing sold-out summer. Yeah, very inconsistent. I mean, he's had glimpses of genius and brilliance where he's like tapped into his kind of goblin sicko mode stuff and I think, wow, he's kind of rising above the house gimmick, but then for most of it, he's just been defaulting to the norm, where it's been Kanemaru interfering and push-up bar being used and da-da-da-da-da. So too inconsistent for me to really get excited or enthusiastic about Ren Narita. So in terms of this match, I mean, Ren's already on 10 points. Let's keep him there, please. So Shingo win.
Yep. I think Shingo does win. When it comes to Ren, I guess the question would be, what would you do in his scenario? You're in House of Torture. You're in a prominent role in said faction. You're doing very well for yourself in a tournament like G1. And you're not killing yourself. You know, you're not, like, of all the guys that we talk about, Ren will probably, if he stayed in the House of Torture, his career would last until he's 63. Right? It's
Kanemaru is right there as the blueprint. Be like, right. You copy me, kid. You follow me, and you're going to have a perfectly good career.
Yep. You're going to be able to walk. You're going to be able to enjoy your later years, your golden years, with your grandchildren. Yeah. And still get a paycheck. Smart guy in the fucking room, probably. Do I enjoy watching it? No. But, I mean, if I'm Ren, I'd be like, no, nah, we'll milk this for another couple of years. I'm so fucking lonely. That said, Shingo wins.
Something I mentioned on the review yesterday. I don't know if you'd have seen this, David, but Kanemaru accidentally broke his whiskey bottle.
Ooh.
And there was a whiskey spraying spot. So there was a fan photographs of Ren lying face down on the floor next to the mat, slurping up whiskey off the floor amidst shards of broken glass.
At
the very least, you've got to respect the commitment to the bit.
Yeah. That's like me on a Friday night. Can't waste any.
You must have been thinking like, can I just hit him with a push-up bar, please?
Right. He's like filtering fucking shards of glass between his teeth to make sure that, you know, he doesn't swallow.
It's like, right, we either call an audible here or I'm sucking up filthy whiskey through bits of broken glass.
Right. It's not like this is a floor that is sterile and sanitized. Ugh, poor guy. Yeah, you know what? Commitment to the bit. Good. I mean, I appreciate that, but yeah, I would have called an audible and been like, bullshit. Good for him. God damn. That's gross, actually. Zach versus Drilla, the Thrilla Maloney is next up. I was shocked at the way he lost the other day. I was shocked. Driller. Like, I was like, I don't know. And I made a comment to you, and it was during this match particularly. And I noticed it with a lot of guys. And it's a thing that you see, but not up and down the card and not up and down the roster. He looked tired. Like, just, I can't wait for the, not mailing it in. Don't take it that way. He just looked like he was fucking exhausted. Like,
you can so imagine that, like, him and the LP being like, bro, I'm absolutely cooked. Can we just do 5 minutes? Like, what, 5 minute sprint? No. Just like 5 minutes of a normal match. Yeah. just end it.
Yeah. I think this year too, there's been a lot asked of guys who maybe this is their second year, but even the spotlight is even brighter and a lot more is being placed on them. I don't know.
It is Driller's debut G1.
So. Right. But even still, like,
I think.
Good.
And is it his second round robin tournament of the year? He was in Best of the Super Junior as well, wasn't he? So probably kind of physically adapting to the demands that entails.
Right. And a lot of these guys with this schedule, it's, you know, hard hitting matches. Night. Day off next night, you know, so it's, you know, the schedule of it. And I don't want to discount it. There's nothing like a Japanese summer. There's fucking nothing like it. And for people who aren't ready for it, just walking out of a fucking hotel will knock you on your ass, let alone go give me a good solid 15 minutes in the ring. And again, these are athletes, they're pros, they're trained, et cetera, et cetera. Still, like, they looked tired. I felt bad. Zach even felt like, even though he's still doing Zach things, it just felt like the entire crew was like, oh, I cannot wait for an off night. I cannot wait. Just, I'm exhausted. I'm at the end of my rope. Zach wins here. He is the champion. He should not be losing to Drillo Maloney.
Yeah, Zach has been outstanding this tournament. I think he's one of the MVPs, and he has carried himself with a lot more attitude and sort of a heelish edge, as he should do. Like, he just feels like, in kayfabe sense, the man. He's the world champion. He's the guy you got to beat, and he's, I want to say, dominating everyone. But I think he's going out there and looking like he is outmaneuvering, outgrappling, out-tacticking everyone that he faces, which is great. Like, it's been really, really good. Driller, yeah, is performing about as I expected he would. I think he's been fine. Again, you know, he's a lower card guy in terms of the G1 climax. I'm not expecting him to be, you know, tearing up any, I don't know what that idiom is. I'm abandoning that sentence. He's been absolutely fine.
And then the main event, Joel, is Great O'Khan versus Gabe Kidd. I'll tell you what, I'm picking Gabe Kidd. Because it's Great O'Khan. It'll find a way to lose. He'll slip on a banana
like
peel.
Walking towards the ring to get his forfeit points, then he like slips up and bangs his head and gets counted out.
Yep. We'll find a way to lose. Good job. Great O'Khan gets the point. Somebody said that he was having a great tour. Would you concur?
We had a question about that.
Oh, really?
Let's find that question. It says
from Seaman McDonald.
Jordan says, how many great matches does Great O'Khan need to have before he gets a little respect? Every G1 always the same. Wow, Great O'Khan is surprising me. What a good G1 run he's having. I think he is having quite a good G1. And he's been, the past two matches, it's been all about him selling. So he had to sell in the Zack Sabre Jr. match, where the whole story of that match was Zach respecting the danger and the power of the claw. And so he just basically disabled the claw in that match and O'Khan had to do everything one-handed. And then the match against Ren, where he was still selling that injury and also selling the knee injury that had been attacked the night before on the undercard. So I thought he did a really good job with the selling. So, yeah, it's been all right, Great O'Khan.
Okay. All right. I was wondering. That was the leg cell was what I saw. I thought the match was, you know, I thought he did a good job of doing that. Let's put it that way. I don't know if it was a great match, mind you, but I thought the job he did there selling was pretty good. And Ren Narita attacks him before the show, before the bell. Is that the dumbest fucking thing that New Japan does? Where they have 9 minutes of brawling and chairs and fucking, but because the bell hasn't rung officially, I hate that so much. It's so dumb. Okay. I thought I'd get that off my chest. You know, being that we're 5 years into a podcast, figured I'd address that point that hasn't been addressed in 5 years. All right. Where do we go? 16? Night 16 now?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Look at us go. We're in Shizuoka now, right? Okay. It's Shota. It's the Great Okan. I would think at this point, is Shota eliminated by this point? If not, no. He wins.
Oh, well, not in my scenario. No.
Okay. So he's winning this one, right?
Yeah, I think he's got to get his win back from the head shaving match.
Okay. I'm with you on that. Then it's El Phantasmo versus Gabe Kidd. Who's winning that one, Joel?
The fans, because we don't have to watch it.
I'll tell you what. I mean, again, you can't. Injuries are injuries, and they happen. You know, taking how fucking mental we were for Gabe Kidd after those dome show matches. And where we are right now with Gabe Kidd, has there been a bigger fucking fall from grace?
Yeah, it depends on your perception, because I think it's only the hardcore New Japan fans like us who perceive it as a fall from grace. I think if you were to ask the average Yankoid imbecile, they're sort of gassing themselves up, ready for him to be championship to AW, so they're probably... Not seeing that it's a fall from grace, but yeah, like.
I mean, I know it's the wild, wild west over there in the AEW. You got Toni Storm ripping out motherfuckers and talking about her vagina every 5 seconds. And God bless her. Talk about your vagina all you want, lady. We talk about our cocks. You know? Do we really think that Gabe Kidd is going to be the same energy Gabe Kidd that January 2025 Gabe Kidd was? Like, did they really think they're getting that? That, like, that's what they think they're getting? Oh, well, you're in for a fucking shock. All right, then it's Zach versus...
Well, obviously changed, didn't it? Like, my working theory is that after that pair of matches, so the Kenny match and the Tsuji match at New Beginning, he was made some sort of offer.
Yeah.
Gentleman's agreement, handshake agreement, and after that point, he's, I don't want to say taking it easy, but he's lost his hunger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure that there was a handshake with a little, it was like me at fucking Pass Young Avenue sliding 20 pounds to the young lady who was running a ragged with us getting us beer, and Dan's jokes. He was so lovable. I was like, here, just take this. Sorry for all the inconvenience. Take it. She's like, are you sure? I was like, yes, take this. Take this and enjoy it. All right, Zach versus Yoshihashi, Joel. Do we expect Yoshihashi to defeat Zach Sabre Jr. and earn a IWGP World Heavyweight title shot? Yes or no?
No, absolutely not.
I agree. Shingo versus Drilla Maloney is up next. I think Drilla Maloney wins us.
Yeah.
Both would be eliminated, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going Drilla. Fuck it.
That would be more interesting.
I think so.
For that as well. But it's inconsequential to who's qualified, so yeah.
Right. And then it's Takeshita Ren Narita. I have Ren Narita pretty high in this, so he's got to start losing, right? It's the cash. Got to be. Main event.
Yeah, and interestingly, they were also wrestling at this stage last year. And
really?
Takeshita beat Red to go through. I think he does it again, but it's just like an interesting quirk of the scheduling.
He's a launching pad. All right, so that means... This can't be right. How can this be right? Oh, because it's still an A. How do I get the B? How do I get to the B table? I get the A table. I want the B table. Oh, there it is. I have to hit the button, Joel, that says B block to get the B block. Right? Isn't that weird how that works?
It's got three.
Fucking amazing. I don't know how I get out of bed in the morning. I really don't. I swear to God, I'm the dumbest fucking person with a microphone. All right. Top of the table. Both at 14 points, by the way. Zach, a Z, Z, S, J, Z, Takeshita. And then one that does not make much sense. My third is Drilla Maloney at 10 points. That the math isn't mathing here. All right. Well, so what wackiness do you have, sir?
I got Zach top with 14 points, and then Umino second, 12, Takeshita third, 12.
Yeah, I got to do some fucking moving around. Cause
no, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to go back and change it.
Drilla Maloney's it? You know what it was? Drilla Maloney, that last win that I gave him over Shingo? That's probably what fucked everything up. I wonder what would happen if I went back, but I'm too lazy to go back. All right, so there you go.
What is your tournament stage look like?
What am I? What do I?
Your tournament stage.
What my tournament stage? Oh, where is it? Where would
you
it?
You should have the option to choose tournament stage.
God almighty. All right, let's see. If I go here. Oh, tournament stage. There it is, yes. I'm doing it on my phone. Quarterfinals. Takeshita Yoda Tsuji.
Sexy.
Evil Drilla Maloney. Any fucking happen.
Not so sexy.
Yeah, those are my quarterfinals. What are your quarterfinals?
I've got Shota against Tsuji.
Okay. We can see that.
Taichi against Takeshita.
Taichi, I love it. That's where the miracle ends. You know, I want to prep you for it.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. I think that's enough. Quarterfinals is enough miracle for Taichi.
Okay, let me do my quarterfinals. I'm picking Takeshita. See, Takeshita Tsuji. That's too early. That ain't gonna happen. So, but I'm gonna take Takeshita because I think my finals are. I thought that was my finals. Be honest with you. All right. Let's see. What are your semifinals?
My semifinals are. See, so it's Shota Tsuji. That's a coin toss for me.
Okay.
Fuck it. I'm going to go Shota.
Ooh. My semifinals is Yuya versus my quarterfinal one winner, which would be Takeshita, right? Yeah. And then my other semifinal would be Zach versus the winner of Evil and Drilla Maloney. And I'm picking Drilla Maloney to move on.
It's getting all the way.
We're going in. It's G1 winner, NXT bound, Drilla Maloney. Rocking it out. No, it'll be Zach, of course. That would be silly. And then what? And then we have... the finals, right? So I guess technically I would have Zach versus fucking no. It would be Yuya versus Takeshita. I had Takeshita. So I guess the only logical thing I would have would be Zach versus Takeshita, which seems not likely to happen.
Yeah, well, my semifinal, I've got Yuya against Shota and Zach against Takeshita. So I'd have Yuya and Takeshita win. So my G1 final will be Yuya against Takeshita.
Okay. That makes more sense to me, honestly. What did I have on my original pool? I could have sworn I had Yota Tsuji in there somewhere. I could be wrong, but all right. That was interesting. to see how we could get there from where we are and still fuck it up. And we did, but we had fun doing it.
Oh, Warrior in the chat says, want to see Driller hit a Driller killer on Don Farley.
Yes. Don't we all? Don't we all? I'll tell you what, you know, maybe he's the guy. Maybe Driller is the guy. He's right under our nose the whole time. And he's the guy that's taking us to the fucking promised land. Driller, let's go. Him and his defined fucking trapezius muscles. Let's fucking go. He's NXT bound, right? Like in 1 year's time, is he Ricky Westenberg debuting?
He was in NXT UK before, wasn't he?
Well, that doesn't count. Nobody recognizes that as a real thing, Joel. That was a fever dream. NXT UK. That never happened. That's like saying New Japan had a promotion called Strong. Right? Come on. Never happened. We're just erasing that from our fucking memories. I'll tell you what. It's the debut of... Oh, I can't even remember his name. Forget it. That's the joke on the snake. All right. Help me. Save me. Throw me a life preserver here. I'm drowning.
Bye. See you next time, everyone.
That's it.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.